Welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 61. We're covering the 2019 WGC Mexico Championship and the Puerto Rico Open. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour previewer at Golf Betting System, and with me we have the European Tour expert, Paul Williams. Good evening, Paul.
Evening, Steve. How's things?
We're doing all right, aren't we? We had a kind of Well, it was a good weekend, but it was ultimately disappointing for both of us, wasn't it? But we'll go into that in a minute. GolfBettingSystem.co.uk. Naturally, we are available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Twitter handles, I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. This podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, and of course, on the Golf Betting System YouTube channel. Naturally, subscribe and follow the podcast. Please take time to rate and review us on iTunes. And naturally, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. So here we go. We had this one from it's EdVed1325. He lives in the United States of America. He actually lives in Hoboken, New Jersey, which is just opposite Manhattan. Looks like quite a nice spot when I was looking on Google Maps. 5 stars, an easy listen, great content and picks. Can't miss an episode. #3sticks. And guess what? He was right, because he sent this before last week's Genesis Open. And old Chucky comes in with an each way return.
Yeah, he finished 6th, didn't he? Yeah.
He did, didn't he? In the chaos of Sunday. So thank you, EdVed, for that. I've gotten some other feedback here. Welcome emails. We welcome any kind of feedback, to be honest. It can be good, bad, whatever. But we had a great email last week from regular listener Jason Eaton. So thank you, Jason. Much appreciated. Now, he raises some very intriguing insight about using different markets over and above the standard each way market to garner profit. So it's a very good and very deep read. But firstly, Jason, apologies for not getting back to you as yet. I will reply later this week. Secondly, Paul, he's offering both of us a trip to the Waste Management Phoenix Open.
What are the conditions?
To be fair, I'm up for this, mate.
What are the conditions with this?
Well, there's only a single proviso, yeah?
Right, okay.
And that is that he wins the lottery. So what could possibly go wrong?
Oh, God. Keep buying those tickets, Jason.
Keep buying some more on that basis. He does say if he ever bumps into us, he will buy us a couple of beers. So there you go.
That seems wholly more likely than winning the lottery. But
yeah, very kind. If he's hanging around North London at a certain point in time, you never know, you might bump into him. Right. A little recap, I think. Now, I can't recall. I mean, let's be frank here. That World Super 6 tournament you covered last week is a bit of a nightmare, isn't it? But you've had the winner.
Yep.
And then this year, with your twin approach strategy, both 54-hole and outright markets, you've landed a full each-way 50-to-1 place on Paul Dunn in the 54-hole market. And then you've got both him and Adrian Otegi into the semi-finals to get full each way money, and somehow you didn't get the winner. So I don't know. Are you either pished or you're quite happy? Because I mean, really, relatively, if you look at your year, your P&L, getting something like that in an event that could be quite easily a straight loss, no return, that's got to be a positive step.
Yeah, when you boil it down, the return of the week was the equivalent of backing, say, a 20-to-1 each way shot for 2 points each way and him winning. So that was the equivalent return on the week, there or thereabouts, something like that. See, I can't be overly disappointed. And you're right, you know, Dunn got himself, actually, to be fair to Dunn, at one point he was 2 shots clear of the 54-hole leader market, and he bogeyed either his second to last or third to last hole, I forget which one it was now, after having a cracking round on Saturday, and then
got pipped
at the end, so he finished in the tie for second. So yeah, that went from being a 50-to-1 winner to a 50-to-1 place. And then, yeah, as you say, Dunn and Ategi. And Ategi had to come through that mass playoff where just one person was going to drop out to get through to Sunday. And he made
it
through
that. How long did that take?
I suspect it was probably 45 minutes or so. It didn't drag on forever because only two of the guys made a bogey and then they played off. But Ategi made birdie on his first hole, so he just sailed through, got through to the final day, and he looked like the winner to me. You know, from what I saw, you know, early morning start on Sunday, I think he was 9 under through the 21 holes that he'd played up to the final, and then it just stalled at the final. Nothing happened. You know, Ryan Fox, who could easily have gone out to Jazz a couple of rounds earlier. I mean, Jazz had kicked himself for not knocking him out at that stage because he missed.
How close was he to being eliminated?
Oh, a 2.5, 3 footer. That was it.
Really?
To win. And he only just hit the hole, Jazz. And then Fox went, you know, obviously won it from that point. And that's how tight this is. You know, I remember the year before, Afi Barmrat, he could have gone out 3 or 4 times and kind of rode his luck to get through all the way to the final and then gets over the line. But yeah, I must say, at that point, with Dunn and Ategi through to the semis, of course, you guaranteed each way money at that point. And with Boyles, who I backed him with last week, they were paying a third of the odds. So,
yeah,
it was a decent return anyway. But yeah, you'd kind of hoped that one of the two would actually get over the line. But didn't happen, unfortunately. A little silver lining is I'd backed Dunn with Rory McIlroy each way as an each way double. So that actually for me returned more than my each way money on Dunn and Ategi added together. Mm. So that was a nice little bonus. I've seen a few listeners and readers of our previews have sent in some screenshots on Twitter and Facebook of some each way doubles they've done with Adam Scott as well, who grabbed a bit of the each way for you yesterday. I'll let you talk about him in a second. And of course Rory, who got a full each way place as well, doubled with Ategi and Paul Dunn. So well done to any of you guys who did that and picked up some nice each way double returns for your money last week. But I guess the overriding feeling was a bit of disappointment, but as you said, ultimately it was a decent profit on the week. So yeah, take it. I guess
I had three in the top nine, which isn't bad going, really.
No.
And squeaked a little bit of profit because Adam decided to start going driving it wildly like he does, and missing four footers like he does.
It was surprising, wasn't it? Because up until that point, he'd played really, really well. But you know, shades of Ategi, really, in that he played so well up until that point, and then kind of the wheels just fall off, don't they? You know, we've seen it all before. You and I are hardened golf punters who've been doing this game for far too long.
And
you kind of, in the end, you kind of shrug it off and move on to the next one. But it is, it's a challenge when it happens to you again.
At 36 holes, I thought I had a very good chance of actually landing the winner, because as we discussed, looking at the past three winners there, it was all about total strokes going tee to green. And when you looked at it after, like, I think, it was like overnight Saturday, they played two or three holes, hadn't they, of the third round.
Mm-hmm.
When you looked at it, McIlroy, I think, was one, or Scott was one, and McIlroy was third. Justin Thomas was fairly low down. It was all putting with Thomas.
Yeah.
And you think, well, that, up until this point, that hasn't been the model for success here.
No.
And it just all went a bit crazy, didn't it? I mean, in the end, JB Holmes, I'm just looking at the details here, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He came 10th strokes gained tee to green, but he was absolutely lights out with the putting.
Yeah.
He topped putting, strokes gained putting, topped it with Jonas Blixton, Scott Langley, second and third. So yeah, he putted his way to victory in the end.
Holmes did.
Quite impressive, I thought.
Very slow.
The one that surprised me more than Scott, because Scott has got a habit of, I think he's work in progress, Scott. I think he's going the right way. It's President's Cup year again, and of course, Siwoo Kim popped up, Leishman popped up. All these internationals keep popping up. I think Scott's in the right direction. But yeah, it's just funny, isn't it? You know, Torrey Pines. I suppose the difference potentially at Torrey Pines was because Rose was playing so well, Scott knew that he wasn't going to get close enough to actually fight for the victory.
No. But he was actually, with a shout, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He had a real chance.
This time, anyone in that back three group had a real chance of winning it, especially when Thomas started making mistakes.
Yeah.
And then clearly, when the real heat came on and he's realised, oh, I could actually win this, it all fell apart. So fair play to JB. He actually pulled it. I think he played well, played strongly. I'm not overly fussed if he plays slowly. That's just the way it is in golf these days. If they're not going to actually pull players up on the rules, well, just play to your advantage, don't you? So all this outrage on Twitter, I've got no interest in it. It's just the way it is. And it was blowing 25 miles an hour and he's playing for a very, very big prize. So take your time, JB.
He's never going to speed up proactively unless someone actively tells him to get a move on. And
It took his time. They pick their victims, don't they? Normally, you know, rookies or youngsters or whatever. They don't ever go to the final group and start. All you've got to do, it just doesn't happen. So
you can imagine, you know, with a final group and as you say in those conditions, it's a tough ask, isn't it? But you know, the flip side is the rules are the rules, and I guess it just needs to be consistent, doesn't it?
It's a proper major championship venue, Riviera, isn't it?
Mm.
I'd love to see a good major around there.
Yeah, it's got that kind of setup.
I'm trying to scan the back of my mind as to whether it's actually in the programme for anything, but it's a cracking venue, I think. Mm. And we did say, I mean, statistically, it's a nightmare there for short putts.
Yeah.
And sure enough, when that wind was, it was howling, wasn't it? I'll tell you what I was fairly impressed with. I was actually fairly impressed with Rory because it would have been interesting. I don't think they'd have caught Thomas. If it had stayed soft and tranquil, I think he'd have won it. But when that started getting leery and it started speeding up that course, all of a sudden mistakes start creeping in, don't they? And I thought Rory actually played right in the final round. He didn't capitulate. He's playing some great stuff, McIlroy. It's just whether when it comes to something like, I mean, he was third again in strokes gained tee to green. It's just whether when it comes to the Masters, and it's not always best to chase the short prices. It's whether you're going to put Rory up there in terms of your tips. I don't know.
He's not far away,
plays
though,
well
he?
Again. He's not far away. Matsuama's another one not far away.
Mm.
The trouble with Matsuama is, and a lot of these players, while they're getting up to speed and playing quite nicely and not making the each-way places, clearly they're getting cut every week.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah, and the value, there's no value there, is there?
Let's jump into the WGC Mexico Championship. I know that you've got a player that you've put as your headline tip that, again, played very, very nicely towards the latter end of the tournament last week, and his price hasn't been slashed. So, without further ado, let's talk the WGC Mexico Championship, shall we?
Yeah, just before we go on, Riviera is scheduled to host the Olympics in 2028, apparently.
Oh, okay. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, so quite a long way off, of course. But, but yeah,
thanks for looking that up.
Yeah, that'd be an interesting. As you say, it's not a major, but I guess it's, you know, in terms of the interest around that tournament, there'll be plenty of interest there.
While you're at it, can you send out some emails to some bookmakers to get some prices for Puerto Rico, please? While you're talking, use your other hand to do that for me.
It doesn't
sound unbelievable, mate. Doesn't We're recording this, folks, list. At 6:05 UK time, and there's only two firms that have actually got prices up for the Puerto Rico Open. There you go. Right, okay, let's talk WGC Mexico Championship. It's the third time they've played this now over in Mexico, isn't it? At altitude, high altitude as well.
Yeah, it is. So first WGC of the season quickly comes around, doesn't it? It's the third, as you say. They've actually scheduled to play this track seven times over the 7 years. So this is the third of seven at Chapultepec, which is just outside Mexico City. An elite field, 72 players, no cuts. So they all play four rounds. And you've got the top players in the world here, the top 50 automatically get an invite, and there's a few extras to make up the 72. Of those top 50, we've got all of them apart from Justin Rose, Jason Day and Adam Scott. All three of those guys are giving it a miss. But other than that, we've got 47 of the top 50 here. So it promises to be a pretty strong, well, very strong event. To kick off the season. And we've seen some decent fields so far this year already, but clearly this is the strongest of the lot. But yes, should be a good one. Chapultepec is a classic tree-lined affair. You said it's at altitude. So
yeah.
The card reads 7,330 yards, so it's par 71. But you're talking about 7,000 feet of elevation here, so it really is at altitude. And depending which club you're using, depending the heat of the day, you're talking anything from 10 to up to 20%. Some of the players are quoted as they've been here that they're allowing for as a difference in terms of how much further the ball flies.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're kind of chopping down a 7,330-yard course by 10-20%, you're talking mid 6,500s, which for a professional PGA Tour or even European Tour event, that's tiny. It's extremely short. So that does tell you something about the way the players are going to get around this course. It's certainly not a bomber's course. It's certainly not a course where you need to take a driver to a number of the holes.
Right.
I mean, my overriding memory from watching this over the last couple of years is that you've got these shortish par fours, which
for
the brave, you know, or foolish potentially, you know, they're more than drivable. Who is it? Is it DJ, I think, on the first day of the first event 2 years ago, on the first hole, which is one of these short, drivable par fours, I think he took a three wood and banged it straight through the green, made double. He went on to win the event, of course, but you know, I think that kind of sets you up to see what kind of strategies that could be employed here. It's very varied, but yeah,
so it's a bit of a wedge fest, you reckon?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's tight, it's tree lined. I think if you can find some fairways, then you are going to be going in with such short clubs. But there's ways and means of, you know, you can recut it. A particularly aggressive player could take driver and one of the woods and really have a go at some of these short holes.
You're talking of memories here. Do you remember JT in the final round last year when 18 approach, short wedge, straight in, forced the playoff
with
Phil? So, yeah.
Lots of excitement. It is very much a risk-reward.
It's a good venue.
Yeah, I do like it as a track. Just some details on the course then. It's Kikuyu rough, Kikuyu fairways, so the likes of which we've seen at Torrey Pines and Riviera last week.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it's generally out in South Africa and Australia, isn't it? Generally, they use Kikuyu. But clearly at those two venues that we've seen recently, they've used similar rough as well. So if you're looking for players, you can play well out of the rough. And we'll go into that in a second because it is quite important here. The greens are described as Poana. They rate about 12 to 13 on the stimps, so they're quite quick. They've got a little bit of bent grass in them, they're so high in terms of the proportion of Poana that they're classed as Poana. A lot of the players have described it as feeling a bit like a Spanish or an Italian style track. That kind of scorable yet tight and tree-lined classical kind of feel to it. So it's no surprise, really, I think, when you look at the different aspects of this. So you're talking a bit of altitude, Poana greens, tree-lined, classical. But we've seen a few of the European players who've come across do well in this. So Fleetwood's done well, finished second to DJ in the first year. Thomas Peters has done well. Ross Fish has done well. Mm. There's three or four players that have featured in the each way places over the first 2 years that were decent prices.
Tyrrell Hatton,
yeah, is another one.
Rafa. Yeah, it's a lot of European Tour links here, aren't there?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, again, you look at the style of the track, you can see why that, you know, it makes a bit of sense, really. And the course itself, we've talked about the first drivable par four. The second's another easy. It's not quite drivable, but it's another short par four. So that's just a shot, either an iron or a wood of some description, and just a flick into the green. And other than the par fives, the first and the second have played the easiest holes on the course both years. So you can get off to a very quick start with this. You can easily be two under, maybe three under through two if you manage to hit the green on the first.
Yeah.
The par threes, though, tend to be where it gets tougher. So they all played over par both years. So what you make up on the par fives and these short par fours, and there's a couple of more short par fours during the course of the actual track. If you can hang on to your score around these tough par threes, then you're doing well. The greens are small and undulating, and I guess, you know, you add it all together, it's going to suggest that it appeals to a certain type of player. But when you look at the players who've contended, there's a right old mix. So the two players that have won here, Lefty won last year at 25-1, as you say. That was after Justin Thomas made his way into that playoff with a slam dunk on the final hole. DJ won at 7-1 in 2017, the first time that it was played here after it had moved on from Doral. So I guess if you're looking at history with this, and I've only listed on the site itself history from the last 2 years, because prior to that, we were talking about the Cadillac Championship, the WGC, which was played at Doral, and to be honest, you could class it as the same event, but could you reasonably draw any conclusions between Doral and this track in Mexico? I don't think so whatsoever. They're so wildly different. Just a point on WGC winners that I made in the preview. The preview came out about an hour or so ago on Monday evening. If you go back to 2016 and the WGC champions, sorry, 2015 WGC champions, when Russell Knox won 150-1. Since that point in time, the biggest priced winner, so we've had 12 WGCs since that point, was Xander Schauffele at 66-1 last year, again at the WGC. Bubba was 50-1 at the match play last year, and then every other winner, so those 10 other winners of WGCs, have all been in the kind of 8-1 to 25-1 bracket. Every single one of them. So the cream certainly tends to rise to the top, as you'd expect, I guess, with an event with such a high quality of attendee.
As we expected last week, and a 150-1 shot one. You can see that. You can see that the cream's going to rise.
Yeah, you'd have thought so.
The other thing, I just chirping in. You know, you got Duk Johnson and Phil Mickelson, who we discussed this last week. Two of probably the best four or five Poana putters in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Both won here.
Yep.
So I'm interested to see your second selection here, who I again think, I wouldn't say quite top five, but look at his record on Poana across Torrey Pines. He's a very, very proficient Poana putter.
Yeah, exactly.
And he popped into the result again last week quietly. Mm. So yeah, I can see where you're heading with both of your top two selections this week.
I've got to say, I did lean quite heavily on not just Poana, but Bent Poana mixed greens as well to whittle it down. Just a quick note on the weather. It's going to be set. It's very, very similar to last year. Actually, it's going to be set fair, mid-70s throughout the 4 days. It does tend to get a little breezier in the afternoons, maybe 10, 12 miles an hour. But other than that, it's going to be pretty placid. So you'd expect it to be pretty scoreable. Last year, they got to 16 under in very similar conditions. It was marginally tougher in 2017 and DJ won at 14 under, but I'd expect it to be in that kind of bracket again, 16 under, maybe a shot or two either side of that, but not a massive amount of variation. And just looking at the players who have done well here, if you pick out the top four finishers from last year and the year before, each one of them typically got somewhere in the region of 70% greens in regulation. So they were missing 30% of greens. They are quite small greens here, which put a lot of emphasis on the short game and putting. And whilst any type of player from off the tee, you know, aggressive players or players who play a far more conservative tee to green game, they can all get to that point. For me, what's really determined the winners here on both occasions is players who've been performing very well on and around the greens. And as you said, that puts an emphasis, you know, further still on being able to and being comfortable on Poana greens or those with the high Poana composition. Yeah. The other point with these, if you pick out the top four from both years, each one of them had either won or had a top two finish in their previous 12 starts. So there was some good recent forms, and both DJ and Lefty both came with two consecutive top six finishes on their form line as well prior to winning here. So, you know, you could pick out
Mickelson came players. With three. Fifth, second, yeah, yeah, sixth. Absolutely, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. He was in
and great, he was still 25-1.
Yeah, yeah. You know, clearly there's some players that are being priced differently, you know, on the back of whatever criteria.
I think 12 months ago, people were still of the ilk that Phil was a bit of a laughing stock. He's never going to win. And then he did actually just pop in with a WGC. So he actually shut a few commentators up with that, didn't he?
That was his first win since the Open, wasn't it?
2013 Open, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it's a long, you know, long time between drinks for Phil, but at that point.
Just with his results and his Poana putting, I mean, fifth, second, sixth, it was like a brick in the forehead, really, missing out on that one, wasn't it? But yeah. DJ as well, like you said, finished third. I think it was third at Pebble Beach, and then he won at Riviera, didn't he? I was on him that week, and then he came here and won again.
He was right at the top of his game, wasn't he?
So, Lily, you want people that have shown something on Poana right up until just the week before, a couple of weeks before. I suppose the other thing with Justin Thomas to bear in mind from last year was he came here off a win as well, didn't he? Because last year they were playing the Honda Classic. So it went Genesis Open, Honda Classic, then this. So he arrived here straight off a win. So it's a shame JB Holmes isn't playing, really, isn't it? But not that he would. But no, I'm joking there. I'm being highly cynical. But as you're saying, it seems to me that you're looking for players that have got pretty much, you know, cast iron form arriving here in Mexico. Mm.
Yeah, definitely. That Honda point, I mean, the Honda's a tough old event, isn't it?
You know, yeah, a lot of very good scrambling are needed there, isn't it? High wind, yeah.
You know, it's almost major-like in that respect. So, you know, the players who've had a tough week at the Honda could, you know, almost have been excused for struggling a little bit here. But yeah, as you say, JT didn't. He was very close, wasn't he? Again, if you look at last week, Riviera, you know, the players who played a lot of golf over Saturday and Sunday because of the way that the event panned out with the weather, you know, some of those guys might be feeling a little bit fatigued to come straight over to Mexico and get cracking straight again. So, you know, I guess it's difficult to try and whittle a player out or to ignore him on the basis that he was, you know, played virtually 36 holes on Sunday, but, you know, perhaps it should be a factor. Difficult one. Looking through the market, I mean, let's just run through the market quickly. Justin Thomas, 10-1 favourite. I think JT's deserved to be the favourite, to be honest. You know, up until yesterday when he was in that final round where he just couldn't hit a fairway, could he, for love nor money, really. Up to that, he played some fantastic golf. And he's had two very live chances to win this over the 2 years that it's been held here in Mexico. So 10-1, yeah, I can see why the bookies have gone down that route. Dustin, 11s, Rory, 12s. So there's not much variance there. Then you're into the likes of John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, it's 16 and 18-1. Ricky Fowler, 20s in places. And Tiger has been backed in quite heavily today. 22-1 is the best price you'll get on Tiger at the moment. But again, if his putting improves, Tiger, and which we know it can do, then he's going to be a pretty big feature this season, I think.
He's playing some lovely golf. His stats aren't actually being listed so far because he hasn't done the minimum amount of tournaments. But I know that he ranks something like sixth so far this season, strokes going tee to green from two apps.
Yeah.
When I just took a glimpse of it, the first player I looked at was Woods, and I just thought, Poana. I just think 22's got a little bit of juice in it.
Mm.
So of the top guys, that's the one that I would potentially take.
Yeah, I can see why he's there.
Yeah,
I can see why he's popular. I can see why he's been backed in, and I guess if you want to take a chance that his putting will improve sufficiently to beat a world class field, then you know, it's very difficult to put anyone off of him, and he's going to be a popular bet this week. That's without a doubt. I've started slightly further down the list. I've gone for Xander Schauffele as my headline this week at 28-1 with seven places each way. Just on the each way places, Betfair, Paddy, Coral and Boyle Sports, all four of those bookies are paying seven places at a fifth of the odds this week, which in a field of 72 is cracking value, I think.
Yeah, good generosity.
Absolutely. So Xander, 28-1, is the seventh in the world. So he's, you know, in this field, he's something like the sixth highest ranked player. But at 28-1, rather, he's kind of down in the 12th, 13th position in terms of the bookies. So there's a bit of disparity there. And for me, there shouldn't be. You know, he's got an awful lot going for him. You know, we've seen from him over the last 2 years or so, not even 2 years, is it, since he won the Greenbrier, which incidentally, old white TPC, was one of these classical tracks at altitude as well. So he's got an altitude form. But we've seen him win the Tour Championship in decent company. We saw him win the WGC HSBC Champions at the back end of last year, which, as you pointed out before we came on air, Phil Mickelson's won, Dustin Johnson's won, Xander won that in November. Tournament of Champions he won at the start of this year, again in a decent field. You know, this is a player who we've seen really pick up his game in decent company.
Three of his four PGA Tour victories have all been on short fields, haven't they? No cut events.
Yep.
Yeah, so Century, HSBC and the Tour Championship.
Yep.
What is there not to like?
Yeah, for me, just...
And he finished like a train last week.
Yeah, you're right. So he started off with a 74 last week, didn't he? And then he came back with three rounds in the 60s to finish in the tie for, was it 15th in the end, I think he finished. So yeah, decent enough efforts. We're talking about Kikuyu. So he finished 25th at the Farmers a few weeks back, was third for scrambling that week at Torrey Pines. 10th in Phoenix. He topped the scrambling stats that week. So if you're looking for a player with decent short game form right now, he's bang in there as well. And I think he can be a little bit wide off the tee at times. But, you know, on a track like this where it is less than driver, you can be a little bit more tactical about how you play from off the tee. That should help him. And realistically, a lot of the players were getting very similar accuracy and very similar greens and regulation stats. It was just how he performed on and around the greens. And we've seen he's decent on Ben Power and greens in the past. And again, going back to events where he's played in top-class company, second at the Players last year, second at the Open. He's got a couple of top six finishes at the US Open over the time. I couldn't find anything not to like, really. He's played this once, 65-68 he started last year, so he was second place going into the weekend. Shot 70-74 over the second 2 days, but he's a better player now. You know, he's improving all the time for me. I think if he gets himself into that kind of position again this year, then I don't think there's no reason to suggest he's going to fade away like he did last year. So, yeah, I like Xander a lot this week, I must say.
I hope he doesn't win because he's going to destroy his Masters price.
Dive in.
But, yes, yeah, but take that with a pinch of salt. I think Xander's got a great chance this week. Mm. And how he played both at Phoenix and also last week at Riviera, to me, reminded me very much of when he won the WGC in November.
Yep.
Because the two events out in Malaysia, the CIMB, and also the CJ Cup that he played, he'd started badly at both and then finished like a train at both.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he's done the last two events.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, Xander, he makes a lot of sense.
Warming himself up for another big scalp this week.
Oh, yeah, big tournament. This is what he peaks for. Yeah, I'm with you.
Second pick is Mark Leishman, who I got at 30-1 earlier with Paddy Power, which is, again, seven places each way. And there's very few players who are in better form than Leishman at the moment. You know, since October, he won the CIMB and he was first for putting, fifth for scrambling that week. He was second in the Aussie PGA, second for greens and regulations, second for putting. Fourth at the Century, so fourth for total driving, fourth for ball strike. You notice they're not all the same stat. He's clearly mixing it around in terms of his skill stats. Third at the Sony, where he was ninth for scrambling. Fourth last week, where he was fourth for greens and regulation. He was also fourth for strokes gained approach and eighth for strokes gained tee to green last week, Leishman. Again, you know, every aspect of his game seems to be right at the top at the moment.
Fantastic around Torrey Pines, couple of runners up spots there. So this is what I said to you. You know, he's a good Poana performer.
He is, yeah. Again, if you dig into those Torrey Pines performances, he's actually led the field for scrambling on one of those occasions that he's done well at the Torrey. And on three separate occasions, he's been top 10 for scrambling. So clearly he gets on well, as you'd expect. You know, he's an Australian, he'll be far more used to the Kikuyu than a lot of the other players. So it all kind of makes a lot of sense. And again, if you're talking about a player who can mix it at the top level, second at the Open in 2015 when he lost that playoff with Zach Johnson, fourth at the Masters in 2013, fifth at the 2014 Open Championship, third at a WGC, at the Bridgestone at Akron in 2014. So some decent field, you know, top class field and form over the years as well.
Yeah.
And if you're looking here, he was 11th going into Sunday last year, 69, 68, 69. Gave himself an outside chance with a flying final round. Did the absolute opposite, shot 77, but he's in much, much, much better nick this year. Right now, he's one of the serious form players out there in world golf.
Yeah, it'd be the biggest win of his career, and that's got to be something that actually spurs him on for this, where a few of them are probably like, it's another event in the build-up. For Leishman, you know, he's playing, in terms of form, he's got to be one of the best in the field, and this course is going to suit him down to the ground.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you and I have always talked about him as being an outsider for an Open Championship or another major championship,
yeah.
Potentially.
At a big price.
Yeah, absolutely. And clearly he's playing so well now that his price isn't going to be sufficiently long to class him as an outsider. But, I still maintain that he's got a chance of a major. I think he's got that kind of mentality and ability to do that.
Agreed.
So, but yeah, perhaps the first step is to get a WGC under his belt. So yeah, I've given him a chance this week. So with two players 30-1 or shorter, I've backed a couple of longer players. And going back to this kind of European link, and the European Tour event that resonates most with me with this would be the one held at Crans Saussure at the in the Swiss Alps, which is again at altitude. It's a short, classical style track, bent power greens. There's lots of correlation there. And if you think about Tommy Fleetwood, who finished second here in 2017, Tommy's done well around there in the past. So there's correlation there, I think. So I've gone for a couple of players who are previous winners at Crans. Firstly, Matt Fitzpatrick, who's he's won there twice, actually. He's also got a win at Woburn, which you and I saw a few years ago, which again is another tree-lined classical-style track. Mm. Seventh at the Masters in 2016, so you can mix it in decent company as well. Also won the DP World Tour Championship when he beat Tyrrell Hatton in 2016, which, again, the link then to Hatton, who played well and finished a tie for third here last year. Couple of top tens at Shoshan over the years, and I think if there's one of the WGCs or two of the WGCs that he's going to do better on, it would be these ones that are far more kind of European in style. So this and the one held in China, of course. In terms of recent form, second at the Hong Kong Open, where he's fourth in scrambling, eighth for putting, fourth in Singapore, again, his long game looked good, second for scrambling. I backed him in Dubai, which put a stop straight on his progressive form at that point. Missed a cut of pebble, but he clearly wants to be playing. He tried to get into the field for the Genesis through the back door. Clearly wasn't entered in any shape or form, so he went through the Monday qualifying and only just missed out on a spot by a single shot. So clearly he wants to be playing.
What rank is he in the world?
He's inside the top 50, so...
He couldn't get in?
No, I don't know what the actual criteria was.
He must have missed a deadline, clearly.
Which, yeah, it would make more sense that he's done that rather than anything else. Because as a top 50 player, you'd imagine that he'd have to pick up events as long as he builds him into his schedule, of course.
Mm.
So that's Fitzpatrick. And my final selection is Danny Willett, who I took at 150-1 with 7 each way. You can get him slightly longer if you're willing to take 6 or 5 each way and different each way terms. But I've taken 7. At the end of the day, you've got a lot of top quality players in this field who are likely, a number of them are likely to contend and to fill some of those each way spots. So for me, it felt more sensible to take more each way places than the headline prices. But each for their own. Another Crowns winner, Danny Willett. And, you know, to be fair to him, it's taken him a long time, hasn't it, to shake off that the rust and shake off that hangover from his Masters win in 2016. But he seems to be getting there now. Some decent form in the middle of last year, finished 6th at the Irish Open, 8th in Italy. And I remember some of the features they did on him at the Open Championship, where they were talking about his coaching and talking about his game and the tweaks that he'd made to his game. And he was... you know, he looked far more confident, talked far more confidently about his game as well at that point. And he obliged at the back end of the year with that. He won the DP World Tour Championship at the Earth Course again. So, you know, again, linking it to Hatton, linking it to Fitzpatrick, who I put up a second ago. That's a huge win for him to get back, get back on the saddle effectively after a tough old spell. He went down to 462nd, I think it was, in the world at one point, having won the Masters a couple of years before. That's a big fall from grace there. But again, there's lots to like. As I say, he won at Crowns. He won the Nedbank in 2014, which is another one played at altitude out in South Africa. Finished 25th recently at the Farmers, where he was 11th for scrambling on the Kikuyu. He finished 33rd last week at the Genesis at Riviera, where he was 9th for scrambling again on the Kikuyu. So that's all looking pretty good. He was 4th for putting at the back end of last year at the Nedbank. He was 1st for putting at the Earth Course. So I like the fact that he's got some decent recent putting and scrambling stats to his name. And for me, 150-1 for a player who I can see placing in this field felt like a bit of a steal, I must say, with 7 places each way. So those are my 4 that I've taken for this week.
He's one I've got my eye on for the Honda Classic next week.
Yeah.
When you're talking grinds, and it was noticeable with Danny, he actually finished quite nicely yesterday when the conditions were at their worst.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, that's the kind of player I often think he is to a certain extent. I mean, the year he won the actual Masters, it was a 5-under win.
Yeah. It wasn't a birdie fest by any stretch, was it?
I think he shot 70 yesterday, didn't he? Which was kind of top 15 for the day. Mm. But yes, you could see him in a windswept kind of PGA National playing some reasonable golf.
Yeah, I think he's playing.
That's if he's entered. I mean, this is all presupposing, but we know for a fact he's taking the PGA Tour seriously this year. Mm. It's pure focus for him. But he's an interesting name, Willett. He's going to pop up somewhere, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's got that. As he's refound that confidence and desire to progress his career. He's still a young man. He's still got plenty of time left to move on from where he is. And, you know, some of these players, they win a major and, you know, that's it. That's the pinnacle. They've reached what they set out to achieve. But I think a couple of years down the line, Danny's reassessed and he can move things forward. We shall see.
He's certainly a high quality 150-1 shot, isn't he?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I know, it's a decent field, and you know, players are that kind of price for a reason generally, but that did stick out to me as one worth taking on.
Okay.
Anything else that you fancied while we're looking at it?
Well, I've been trying to get some prices out of some bookmakers for the Puerto Rico Open that I've been stitched up with this week, but I think where you're at is kind of where the way I would play it. One name that kind of does jump out potentially, if we're talking about players that come here fresh off a win and then go on to contend again, DJ being one, of course. Another one being Justin Thomas last year, who missed out in the playoff, would be our friend Ricky Fowler.
Yeah.
But I'm not certain that Ricky Fowler and Poana are a match made in heaven.
Mm.
I mean, you look at his record at Torrey Pines. I know that he has sponsorship work that he has to do there. It isn't great. He never plays Pebble Beach. And it's kind of people's schedules that tend to give away what they think about actually playing those kind of greens, those courses. So I'm not 100% certain about Fowler. Clearly at those prices, he is particularly short. The one that just did jump out at me straight away when we were looking, and the way that he's playing and the way that he's warming, and we just know with Tiger it's happening. It happens all the time. He's building up to speed. It was just that 22-1 on Tiger. I thought there's some juice in that.
Yeah,
20 to 1 if you want the seven places available. You know, if you just wanted an each way value punt out there where you think, you know, a decent interest in the week, I think Tiger Woods isn't going to be too far away. But yes, I'm with you on both Schofield and Leishman. I think Leishman is the kind that would win this, and again, you'd just be slapping your forehead going, why the hell did I pick him?
Mm.
Because at that price in this field,
yeah,
and you know, there's a couple of players above him that on current form you just can't see winning it. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying Brooks Koepka's a bad player, because he isn't, but you know, he's at 18-1 quite rightfully. He's a three-time major champ, blah blah blah. But do you actually think Brooks is going to turn up this? I don't. Do I see Mark Leishman turning up at 28s or 30s? Yeah, I see that.
Yeah.
So yeah, and also he's exactly the same price as Tony Finau, who again, you know, we all like Tony. His stats are fantastic. You know, there's a lot of Tony truthers, but Tony still hasn't delivered.
Yeah,
and he's the same price as Leishman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and very similar price to Paul Casey. So yeah, I'm with you. What did you think to Jordan Spieth last week again?
That was a shocking final round, wasn't it? Absolute shocker. I know he needed his bucket and spade at the 10th, didn't he, to try and get himself out of the mess that he got himself
He's
in.
He's an enigma, Spieth, isn't he? Every first round, people are on Twitter, aren't they? He's back. Oh, he's going to win this. Oh, yeah. And then there's doubles and trebles starting flying everywhere.
Yeah, and quads.
Yeah,
There's clearly some form underlying there. It's not all quite there yet, is it? It's, you know, at some point he's going to put it all together and he's going to be a very, very, very strong player once again, as we know he can and should be. But at the moment, it's just not quite all working, is it?
I know you're talking about scrambling being very important here, but I don't think Bubba's playing too badly.
No.
And we know he likes Poana. We know that he likes a little bit of bent in there as well. And the other one that has been playing some great golf so far on the West Coast and hasn't delivered a win is our friend Gary Woodland, who again, 35-40-1. When you're clearly going for Schofle and you're going for Leishman, it's difficult to, and you want to get some value in at the back end of the tips, it's difficult to go for these. But, you know, potentially those two could be in the fight this week as well, Bubba and Gary. Because Bubba isn't all power and bluster. He can be tactical if he needs to be.
He
top 10 here last year, didn't he?
Yeah, I backed him last year. Actually, he was my headline pick last year. And didn't he get off to a ridiculous start, something like 7-under through the first
round? He was flying,
absolutely,
mate.
Flying. And you know, I was already thinking about what I was going to spend the winnings on, and then
the bogeys started creeping in.
Yeah, and it all dries up. as is the game.
Playing some nice stuff though, Bubba.
Yeah, he's not far away. He's not far away at all.
But then I don't want him again to ruin his Masters price. So hopefully he finishes like top 10, something like that. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, now there's plenty you can make a case for. That's for sure.
We'll talk Puerto Rico Open. I can't really talk about it in detail because the bookmakers haven't really decided to put any prices up. It's one of these alternate events. It wasn't on the schedule last year. The last time they played here was 2017. That was DA points. He won at 150-1. But I'm just going to give you some pointers for those that are interested, because some of these alternate events do throw up some weird and wacky results. I mean, take points. He was 175-1 when he won this in 2 years ago. Tony Finau, his only PGA Tour victory, guys. Yeah. Finau truthers. So his only PGA Tour victory is the Puerto Rico Open so far. 50-1. And he was 50-1 when he won that.
Yeah.
Alex Checker, 125s. Chess and Hadley, I was on him that year, 50-1. Scott Brown, 50-1. George McNeil, 55-1. So, you know, blindingly obvious from the start, the overall average price of the winner here since 2010 is 81-1. So if I were you, I would not be chasing the likes of Daniel Berger at 12-1.
Yeah, it's not exactly value-packed by the looks of it.
It's not value-packed, is it? And yes, you do get the likes of, when you look at results here, you do get the likes of a Bryson DeChambeau popped up here last time. Bearing in mind, at that stage, he was 80-1.
Mm.
Bloody hell, Bryson DeChambeau, 80-1 in the Puerto Rico Open, yeah. that was 22 months ago. Ian Poulter was a 33-1 shot in 2016. He finished third. He led at 54 holes. So some of the names will feature: Emiliano Grillo should have won here in 2015, didn't. So I'm not suggesting one of them doesn't get in the mix, but invariably they don't tend to win.
Was that the one where Grillo missed that three-footer to win at the end?
Yeah, I think he did, didn't he? Yeah, that's right. Went in a playoff, something like that?
Yeah, I remember now.
So yeah, the only prices up are Paddy Power, Betfair. Thank you to them. Charles Schwartzel's been added to the field. I can see why bookmakers aren't pricing it up, because these fields are notoriously going to change. So this is all going to come to fruition Tuesday morning over here in the UK. But Daniel Berger at 12-1. Peter Uihlein at 14-1. No. It's just no good to me. No good to me at all. I had a sneaky feeling potentially for GMAC, but I'm seeing 18-1. That doesn't interest me either. Of the better prices, and this sounds really, really silly, but, you know, Scott Brown, 28-1. Well, we know that Scott Brown comes here. He loves it. He's won here. He's got three or four top tens. You know, 28's about Scott Brown. If you did want an insurance policy, that's probably not too bad, because he's actually playing half reasonably well, Scott Brown.
And he
isn't going to be turning up here with the, you know, with the arse, the fact that he's having to play the Puerto Rico Open, which I think a lot of these players do. You know, he'll give it his full beans. The other one that's shortish and is far better than his price, in my mind, is Ollie Schneiderjans, who's 30-1. I think Schneiderjans is a better player than a lot of players around him, like Matt Jones, who's kind of level on price. You think Ollie Schneiderjans, Matt Jones? And he did show just a tad at Phoenix a few weeks ago. He started with a 67.
Yeah, I remember his name popping up, yeah.
Yeah, top 11 in the field. And he's now got Zach Johnson's old caddy, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got a feeling there that they're clearly working through some major changes in his game. But go back to the 2018 Barracuda Championship, another one of these alternate events that Schneiderjans probably shouldn't be playing in. He shot 64 in round one, or relative of 64. I know it's all done on Stableford. He was second at halfway, finished 10th. He actually finished 5th. So, you know, at least Schneiderjans can turn up to an event like this and has proven in the past that he will take it seriously.
Yeah.
So maybe Schneiderjans at a shorter price, I don't know. But for me, especially with those prices, the winning prices, I'm looking for a player that's scoring well at the moment and is that kind of mid price, that 40, maybe hopefully 50 to 1 kind of price. And as it stands, there is only one player that I have actually tipped and backed. Well, I haven't backed him. That's a lie, actually, because it'd be churlish to back him because there's only one
player. With one bookie.
But anyway, I've written his tip. It's done. It's a done deal. Dominic Bozzelli, who I think's got something about him, Bozzelli. I think he's a good player.
Mm.
Be coming here with little pressure because he's coming off two missed cuts. But those missed cuts aren't quite as bad as they seem. He actually made the field at Pebble Beach. He actually shot 68 in his last round there, which was 4 under, which was best that day, top 11 in the field. So yeah, coming off a nice little round. He missed the cut at Torrey Pines, but actually he played reasonably well there. He's not playing bad stuff, but the thing I love about Bozzelli is he is very, very... These are Paspalham greens. It's a 7,500-yard par 72. It pretty much plays as difficult as the wind. It looks like it's going to be blowing 20, 25 miles an hour. But I bear that in mind in terms of 15 to 20, 25 gusting. We're still looking at temperatures 26, 27 degrees, so you can get the ball out there. Bozzelli, he's just the sort for me that would pop up and win this. He's got some very nice statistics.
He played well at the Desert Classic, didn't he? So
yeah, finished fifth, yeah.
Fifth there, yeah. Which,
top 100 for Eagles per hole. Birdie or better, 13th so far this whole season. I mean, that's a decent. Par 5 birdie or better, 18th. And also, when he goes for the green, the conversion he gets, 28th on the PGA Tour. I just think he's playing some really nice stuff. Even at Torrey Pines, where he missed the cut, he threw a round in there, a 67 in round one, which was in the top 15. And as you said, that fifth at PGA West, and all of his results. When I wrote this up, it was apparent today that he finished top five and top three within his first 10 PGA Tour tournaments when he was a rookie. He was third at Copperhead behind Adam Hadwin, and it would have been Patrick Cantlay in 2017. And that came off the back of a top five at PGA West. So we're talking here Bermuda grass. He then went to St Jude, finished 10th there on a tough golf course in very humid, hot conditions. And then he qualified as a rookie for the playoffs. But then, it's kind of nondescript, but it's not proven, but there was a shoulder injury involved, and he didn't even get to play that year at the Northern Trust. He had to pull out as he was warming up for the event.
Right.
Disappeared off the scene, didn't come back till Sony, which would have been, 4 or 5 months later? And then throughout 2018, really struggled. So it looks like he was carrying an injury all year, did nothing. His best result was 13th at the Honda Classic, very windswept, so yeah, he can play in wind. And then he's come back this year playing on a major medical, and all of a sudden it started to click, which would suggest he's injury-free. So this season, he started off with a 48th, I think it was, at the Shriners. Then he went to the Mayakoba, and he was, I think he was third after 36 holes. Now, Mayakoba, Paspalham Greens in Mexico, very similar kind of test. I know it's not as long, but that shows that he can play Paspalham, and he can score well. And then since then, 11th at Sea Island. He then finished, he was fifth after 54 holes at Wailea at the Sony Open. That was when his major medical extension was closing and it all got a bit too much for him in the final round, finished 33rd. But he still got conditional status, which means he can still play lower level events on the main tour. And sure enough, PGA West, fifth, played really, really well. And then, no disgrace, missed the cut by one at Torrey Pines, and he actually made the cut but didn't finish at Pebble Beach. There was one good round in both of those performances. I think if I can get 50 to 1 on Dominic Bozzelli, I'll be a very happy chappy.
Just look at... Come.
Well, they say if you don't change your ways, I've been changing how I've been doing things recently. You know, you go through fallow periods, fallow years. I'm changing up. I keep constantly changing the way I'm working. And slowly but surely, my results seem to be getting a little bit more consistent. We've had a win and blah, 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 blah. This is the kind of event that usually I throw a load of points at and get nothing. Although I have had the winner here. So for me, if I don't find the player that I like the look of at a good price, at the price I'm looking for, I just won't back them.
No.
So you might even find it's as blatant as me as going Dominic Pezzelli this week and maybe just an outsider, and that'll be that. And then you cash your 6 or 8 points that you would have lost otherwise, and you move on to the next one.
Yeah.
So there's nothing I really fancy, the obvious one, and I know the one that you would be all over like a rash, is Matt Every.
Yeah, he's not far off.
But that, I'm seeing 40-1 on first show.
I've got to say,
fill me with a lot of enthusiasm.
I've got to say, looking at Bozzelli, just going back to some of those results you read out. Mayakoba, he opened with the 64.
Yeah.
RSM Classic, he's second round 64, third 65, fourth round 66. Sony Open, second round 64, third round 64. Desert Classic, third round 64. Yeah. The guy is shooting some splendid golf.
Yeah, really
good golf in there. So yeah, now I can see where you're coming from. At this kind of level, it'd be interesting to see what other prices are put up for him overnight. But yeah, I like that a lot.
I think he's a good bet this week, Bozzelli, in this field. Mm. And it is this field. I mean, you deal with European Tour, so I need to be relatively happy with my lot on the PGA Tour. But this is garbage. This is absolute garbage, mate. For a PGA, I don't think I've ever seen even an alternate event as weak as this. This is terrible. Daniel Berger, what's he doing here? 12-1? Potential other players I do like the look of. I mean, we've got Kung Hoon Lee at 50-1. He's never even finished in the top 10.
Yeah.
It's madness. Sam Horsfield plays this. That's just throwing that out there. Wyndham Clark's been doing some reasonable stuff recently, 66s. Andres Romero knows his way around here, 66s. I'll tell you another one that I think is going to pop up soon at some point is Freddie Jacobsen.
Yeah.
Just starting to make some cuts. Yeah, very, and it plays brilliantly by the sea. 80-1. You might get a touch of 100s if they ever price this up. Tom Lovelady was another. He plays quite well. He did very well at the, I think it was the Corrales last year, which again is similar to this, Paspalham Greens. Big hitter, yeah. Lovelady. That's a potential one. The other one I did see at a big price, and I tried to tell you the name of this guy, but my pronunciation was absolutely terrible. But we'll go for it again. Hank Lebet. It's even worse this time, Paul. Lebioda. Hank Lebioda.
Let's just call him Hank, shall we?
Hank. 125-1. And he's just been popping up recently, Lebioda. I can remember him firing something silly like a 67 at Torrey Pines, and he got in like the second or... He was in the same group as Talar Gooch, who finished third in the end at Torrey Pines.
Yeah.
Now, he didn't play like Talar in the final round, but there's just signs there that something good is coming. I just thought that price was fairly reasonable. But yeah, I haven't got a lot more to say, to be honest.
No, well, you might find some of these players... You know, this is one set of prices from Paddy and Betfair, so you might find you get some real outliers with some of these names you mentioned.
I mean, listen to this last time. Yeah, DA Points won at 175-1. Bill Lundy was second at 300-1. He hadn't played for like 6 months. Retief Goosen, 200-1. Yeah, it's just a lottery, mate. It's just, you pick these guys, there's nothing in it. Steve Marino, 2016. He was in a playoff with Tony Finau, 200-1. Mm. So, yeah, there's value out there. Go ahead and try and find it. But, you could be firing a lot of bullets and ending up with a lot of missed cuts. Don't know. I'm still looking. I'm not. Angel Cabrera, he's up your street, isn't he? 300-1?
300-1. Warming himself up for his annual trip to Augusta National.
Omar Uresti, 500-1.
Good putter, Omar.
I'll tell you one more player that I will mention that's been playing quite well recently. Although it might be that he's withdrawn, looking at this. Oh, he has withdrawn. Would have been Max Homer.
Right.
But yeah, he was priced up at like 28-1. You just think, no, you're okay. Sometimes you're just better off letting these players win at these prices. This is it. If nothing really interests me, nothing stand out, I might just go with Bozzelli and that's that. Yeah, he's out. That's just been tweeted by 2 minutes ago. Grayson Murray is out. Max Homer is out. You know, this field's going to get even poorer. Can you believe it?
They'll be dragging people off the streets to play, right?
They might get you and me over there.
No, that would be
bad. Don't worry, though, because Grayson Murray's out and Todd Hamilton's in with his Open Championship credentials. Dear, oh dear. It's not great, is it? Anyway, I'll have a preview out tomorrow. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. I think that's about it.
Indeed. All good. Best of luck, all everyone. Good.
Best of luck to you, Paul. Best of luck to everyone listening. If you do listen to this on YouTube and you're still with us, it would be fantastic if you were to subscribe and give us a like for the show. The numbers we're getting across the downloads on the podcast, the numbers we're getting on the views on the YouTube channel, they're all growing majorly. And just, you know, the subscriber numbers, the amount of likes, the amount of reviews, it all tells Google, it tells YouTube that, you know, that our content is free of charge and it's very popular, and it just helps the momentum to build. So if you could give us a subscribe, that'd be most appreciated. Right, thank you for your time, Paul.
Yeah, take care. Have a good weekend.
Thank you to the listeners. I will point out as well, we did do a Masters podcast last week, Masters Anti-Post. I will put a link through to that in the description box of this week's podcast. That, again, is proven hugely, hugely popular. So do not hesitate to give that a listen as well. That's with Barry O'Hanrahan as well. We recorded that last week. Right, thank you to everyone. We will see you again very, very soon. Goodbye.